If you have a podcast and want to monetize it, stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Good morning, everybody. Happy New Year's Eve.
Yes.
Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on a Wednesday. Keep an eye out for the weather today. We are in a winter advisory. Our sister station, 930 WBEN, will have you covered on all the updates going on there. Travel safe. Be safe tonight as well, of course, with it being New Year's Eve. I know it's a big party night
as well. I get that it's a party night, but if like if it's ugly out there, don't.
Right.
Don't do nothing silly.
Don't. You'll have next year. You'll have next week if you want to. It doesn't need to be a party
night
tonight.
Literally tomorrow.
Right. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Also, tonight we've got Sabres at 8 going for 10 games in a row. Would be for just the fourth time in the team's history. They would have reached that milestone, the first since 2018-2019. And then, of course, Bills getting back to practice today as we prepare for what is in all likelihood going to be the final game at Highmark Stadium on Sunday, 4:25 against the New York Jets. And right off the rip, that's kind of where we want to start today. This is our last time on air for this week. We're off tomorrow for New Year's Day. Sal's got Friday with Sean McDermott. And so with that, 803-0550, the number to call. If you want to give your favorite memories, your lasting memories of the current Highmark Stadium, I mentioned it last night on the nightcap for me, Derek. It's going to always kind of be my first game, is going to be my lasting memory. I am on the younger side. I'm under 30. So when I say 2011, be nice. But 2011.
Be nice.
2011, you know, going with my dad and my brother, first time at the stadium for a regular season game. I'd been to preseason games and stuff like that. But it doesn't register the same as the regular season ones or just really big events. You know, it's a preseason game. It is what it is. But I went as sort of a mix between an Eagles and a Bills fan. I've said this story before, but you know, the initial team that got me into football was not the Bills. It was the Eagles, the movie Invincible, you know, don't judge a boy too hard for not falling in love with Trent Edwards at quarterback. Like, it is what it is. But that 2011 season, I've mentioned it a lot. I have a lot of strong memories for, you know, ultimately that team that doesn't actually go to the playoffs and what, finishes 6-10. But the start of the season was amazing, and I go to my first game, Derek, 2011, against the Eagles, then called the Dream Team with Michael Vick, DeSean Jackson.
Oh, my God.
All of those. Jeremy Maclin.
Dubbed by backup quarterback Vince Young.
Yeah.
Nnamdi Asamoah was signed there.
I mean, on paper, that team was supposed to be good, but yeah. I went there as sort of a mix. Again, it was just more of a fun experience finally being able to go to a Bills game, and it means something. Bills win that game. They beat the hell out of the Eagles. I think Vick throws like 3 or 4 picks. And I have not looked back since. I, at most now in my life, and really for much of my adolescence, kind of just more had like, oh yeah, the Eagles are cool. And I moved off of them entirely. Like, I am now a Bills fan entirely. And I do credit a lot of that to going to the stadium, to, you know, being at that game in part. And again, I mentioned this last night. You know, before that, the games I went to, Derek, were UB football games. And no disrespect to UB, UB Stadium and Highmark Stadium are very different beasts. And, you know, when you
and
get
it's tough to have a college town environment in a Bills town.
Right. And so, you know, 13-year-old Zach showing up to that stadium, you're like, oh my goodness, this is unbelievable. And I haven't looked back since. I haven't been able to attend many games past that. I went, I think either the next year or the year following when they hosted the Ravens, right after the Ravens had won the Super Bowl, EJ Manuel's the starting quarterback. That was my first game. I went with a bunch of buddies. That was a blast because it was just a bunch of – it was like 6 guys in high school. We spent the night at my one friend Kyle's house. We all got up early in the morning to go there. They beat the Ravens, which at the time you're like, there's no way. They just won the Super Bowl last year. Like, who were we the Bills? Wait, we won? It was a blast.
When you asked the question, we talked about it. I have a depressingly low amount of times that I've been at the stadium for being around here for – 37 years.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, when you say be nice, to whom? You or myself?
Well, I know. I give off the sense that I'm young. You know, some of these people are going to hear 2011 and go, what?
The first person I'm kicking the butt of on that is me. God, I'm old.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm not mean to you. I'm mean to me. I'm also my first target always. But I have a very low amount of times that I've been at the stadium. And if you include preseason, that number goes from 4 to 5.
Yeah.
That'll happen when you've been around working Bills games at the station for 9 years now. And I'm not one of the main suspects, so I don't go there for the games. I'm here and I'm working all day. So I haven't been able to go to many games, especially with them being good. The first one that sticks out to me is one with my cousin, where it's a game that's whited out for everybody. It's whited out even for the people that went to it because it was snowing so much. Because tickets were like $7.
Oh, yeah.
For the Bills and the Cowboys to wrap up the season.
Yeah, baby.
And my cousin and I just went, yeah, we'll grab like 80 layers and just go.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm going to text him about that later. He lives in Germany now. But that's the first one that sticks out to me. Not a good game. One that not many people remember. Kellen Moore was the starting quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. I remember how hype I was about Kellen Moore, the college player.
I mean, how are you not?
Oh, my God. At Boise State.
Boise State, baby.
At Boise State, he was a godsend. And now he's the third stringer on the Cowboys starting today because this game is meaningless for everybody involved. You could barely see the field from where we were sitting. And that's the first one I think of because those are the ones that, in all the wrong ways, do stick out.
They do. Yeah, you're right.
Because A, the stadium's not full. B, sometimes there's like a certain bit of goodwill to the community that, like you heard about like back in the day, like Russ Salvatore would buy tickets to make sure it wouldn't black out.
Yeah.
That didn't even happen for this game. That's how bad it was.
Looking at week 17, it's cold in December and they're not in the playoffs.
Week 17, yeah, I'm going to this game. Why not? And that's the first one I could think of. I don't have a long list.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned, though, you know, they weren't good and they're good now. I always wonder how many people, even older, you mm-hmm. know, generations that have been around the stadium a lot longer, how many people's favorite Bills memory is now of the current team because of Allen, but also because of the drought and overcoming that and then sort of not even middling for a little while. The Bills break the drought, miss the playoffs 1 year, and then they're now 7 years in a row. They've been one of the best teams. There hasn't been a point where we've sort of danced around just being an okay team. You know, the playoffs still being the ultimate success for, you know, a little while there. I talk about it with the Sabres, and it was the same with the Bills drought where you almost stopped worrying about the Super Bowl and you were kind of just like, I just want to get in the dance. I don't care. Like I've mentioned that a lot when they do get into the playoffs that first year in 2017 and they go to Jacksonville, I couldn't care less about the game. It was more the fact that the drought was over. And so for them not even to have kind of that moment of or period of shakiness and are we sure they're going to stay? Are we sure they're any good? They have one off year where they sort of are like, yeah, we're going to reset. And everyone knew that. And then from then on, they've been awesome. 2019 is maybe the only time where you weren't really sure if they were good or not. But to be fair, yeah, they were. It just Allen hadn't ascended yet. They were a good team. Allen stayed.
Yeah, they
ascended.
Were a good team. They just hadn't ascended yet. And it just, again, it's very interesting to me. But because I don't have such a long list of football games there, the other one that sticks out to me is the World Junior game
mm-hmm.
between U.S. and Canada. And it sticks out to me for a lot of reasons, but the biggest one being I got roasted here for liking those Bills-themed Team USA yeah. jerseys. Absolutely torched by everybody that worked here. I was the only one that liked them. I felt so alone. And then, in a moment of ill-advised spite, I bought myself a jersey of Austin Matthews.
It's good. Always do things out of spite.
What a traitorous move I made.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to upset everyone at that point because I was made fun of relentlessly. And I'm like, oh, yeah? Well, how's this? That day, though, I was everybody's friend.
Right, right.
That day, I was everybody's friend because I had a Team USA jersey, a Toronto Maple Leafs player jersey, and a Bills jersey. Canada friends, oh, Matthews, yeah. USA guys, nice Team USA jersey. Buffalo friends, Bills jersey.
Yeah.
Everybody liked me. And then I got back here and Howard chased me down the hall.
You had to get humbled at some point. You had to get humbled. I can understand that.
So, yeah, that was one, like, but also the game itself. It was that snow globe action. It wasn't windy. It wasn't.
It was picturesque.
It was very picturesque, exactly. But it was enough snow that they had to manually come out and take shovels for the ice crew, just like actual snow shovels, not the usual like that they do with the ice maintenance crew. But they had to actually scoop up the snow because it was that powdery goodness. But then Team USA wins that game in a shootout. Casey Mittelstadt, of course, is the people everyone's wanting to see. It was a fun time, and I'm pretty sure Brady Tkachuk had the eye black of Bills Mafia.
Oh, that's fun. I don't remember that, but that's fun.
Yeah, so like it was a really great time. It was very cool. I had a lot of fun with that, and as a matter of fact, as we have an opportunity to get connected with our fans, Brendan tweets in a picture of that game.
Oh yeah. Well, you bring that one up. I was also thinking the Winter Classic because we're getting ready for that one down in Florida, which most people are making fun of. But I know so many people who weren't even at that game just remember seeing it on TV and going, no, that's the coolest thing that's happened at that stadium. We bring it picturesque. Right. It's the snow globe, snow. And while the Sabres don't win, it's still this, oh, my good, like, this is exactly what we wanted. This is exactly what
the league wanted. It's what you picture when you're out on the pond skating.
Yeah, so like those are also – I didn't attend those games. Those are also some I think of as just some of the cooler memories to happen at Highmark. And look, to be perfectly honest, they're getting a new stadium. It's not a dome. They're probably going to have more of these. They are probably going to have some of those games. They won't have a Super Bowl. The city of Buffalo probably can't, you know, have it, even if they had a dome, just the infrastructure. But in terms of those, the Winter Classic, maybe even like, you know, Olympic hockey games, they could absolutely do something like that. I know – World Cup soccer games has always been kind of the idea. Well, not World Cup soccer games, but U.S. national team soccer games could be something as well. I'm excited for those nights coming up. But with this being our last time on this week and in all likelihood the last game at Highmark Stadium being on Sunday, definitely want to get people's thoughts. And we'll do that here. 803-0550, the number to call. I want to give your thoughts. And we'll start this morning off with David on the line. David, how we doing?
Hey, good. How you guys doing? Thanks doing for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for calling in.
Yeah, I mean, lasting memory from this stadium, it's got to be for me the home opener of 2014. My mom was a lifelong Bills fan. I am not a Buffalo native, but I was lucky enough to have a mother who was a Bills fan. So I grew up a Buffalo Bills fan. She was her 60th birthday, and I surprised her with front row end zone tickets. She'd never been to a game before. And this was kind of like a culmination of a lot of things that were leading up to this game. I mean, it was the first game after Ralph C. Wilson had died. Mm-hmm. It was the first home game after they announced that the Pegulas had bought the Bills. It was, you know, a little bit before they had announced that Jim Kelly was cancer-free and he was going to be the legend of the game. Sammy Watkins, it was going to be his first home game appearance. So it was like a lot, you know, you couldn't get tickets to this. So it was like a big deal. My mom was excited. I called in a huge favor for somebody who worked for the Bills. They got me sideline credentials for my mom, and I didn't tell her until we got there. So she was ecstatic. You know, she's going all over the place. She's, you know, stars in her eyes. And then we get to the front row end zone seats. It was just a memorable game. I mean, we were sitting right there. CJ Spiller, he had a 100-yard kickoff return touchdown. He almost ran right to us. And my mom, she's 60 years old, but she's slamming the padding right in front of her. You know, classic Bills fan. The Bills went on to win it 29-10, and it was honestly one of the most euphoric moments I've ever seen for my mom. And the reason why I remember this beyond that is the legacy of that game and that moment with her, because my mom had cancer, and she died less than a year later. And at that game on the sideline, she got to meet Jim Kelly, who was also, you know, had just gotten cleared from cancer. So they, you know, they briefly met for like 10, 15 seconds. But that was kind of like, you know, she was amazed by that.
Yeah.
I took a photo of her before we got sent to our seats. And she's on the sideline and she's smiling ear to ear. And she's in a Doug Flutie jersey because Doug Flutie was her favorite. That picture of her, she died less than a year later. That photo was there at her service. That photo a decade later was there at my wedding where she was going to be sitting. And that photo sits on my wall in my house to this day. And, you know, when I think about my mom, I look at that image. That's what I picture, is her happy at the Bills game. I think about that game when I think about memories at the Ralph or Highmark.
Yeah, absolutely. David, thank you for that call.
That's a lot to be able to put out there, too. I appreciate that story. Because, again, it's not necessarily even about the result on the field. It's about the people you go with. It's about the stories about that. That they could have stunk that game. And I'm pretty sure it's probably a top – like, it's an all-timer, though, for him and his mother because of the impact.
Mm-hmm.
So –
I mean, that's where
thank you for the call. Yeah. That's a big one.
And that's where Bills Mafia comes in. Is during the drought. It's not when the 90s
drought football.
when they're winning. I mean, this is drought 2014. They go 9-7, but they're still like they're in.
And they handle the Dolphins, which of course you know everybody loves to see.
But we're still like in the chokehold process of the drought. Of just it feels just you're not getting out. Where are we going? And yet, like for you to get such good memories even from that. I mentioned 2011. Like, I have such fond memories of that season. They go like 6-10. They're not good. David has that connection with his mom, and it's a season they still don't wind up winning, making the playoffs or anything like that. But it doesn't matter, like you said, because of the people that you're around, the people you're with, the people you went to those games with. And this is where I do really, and I mean this, no matter where my career takes me, if I ever leave Buffalo, I stay here for whatever it is. I will always appreciate this about Buffalo and its fans is that college feel to it. And I don't mean the rowdiness or anything like that, but just the genuine connection the community has to the team. You don't get that in Los Angeles. You just won't. People love the Lakers and they do see that as like their team, but that's maybe kind of the only one. We joke about the Chargers all the time, just not being able to get their fans. Anybody into SoFi. Dallas is maybe too big of a brand. People in Dallas love the team, but they're such a big brand. They're everywhere. And it does kind of just feel like I just wound up being a Dallas fan. And that might happen to a certain extent with Buffalo, with Josh Allen. But there is something too, being in Buffalo, having that around. And David even mentioned he's not from Buffalo. He's not a Buffalo native. His mom, though, was a fan. But there is always going to be that connection. The small market, the very almost niche market of Buffalo can really bring people together. And you just don't get that in some of the bigger cities. And it will always be something that I find very beautiful and very romantic with the sport of football in Buffalo in and of itself. And we're seeing it now with the Sabres as well. For as much heartache as they give people, they go on a bit of a win streak. And you do feel a bit of a fervor in the town.
Everyone's in a hoopla.
Yeah. Again, a number to call, 803-0550. David, thanks for the call there. It was wonderful to hear from you. We'll go back to the phones. Brad is up next. Brad, how are we doing?
I'm doing good. How about you guys?
Doing well.
Hey, listen, I've been to plenty of significant games there. I don't go too much anymore, but I just had one moment with my grandfather, my father, and my brother when I was 8 years old. I don't know the specific, time frame, but you guys would. It's when the Bills beat the Dolphins for the first time after so many years, and I was sitting in the section, and it was probably like late 70s, like I said, and when the Bills won, I remember Larry Zonka scoring a touchdown, and it was pouring rain, and the turf was so slick, he like slid into the end zone. It was right in front of me. But when the Bills won, they tore down the goalposts, and Ralph Wilson's box was behind our seats, and they tore down the goalposts, and then they handed the goalpost up all the way along, the stands up to where we were. And, my dad's like, touched the goalpost, and I helped hand it up, and they opened up, slid the window open to Ralph Wilson's box, and they put the goalpost in there, And it was, as a kid, you're like, what the heck just happened, right? It was just a wonderful, wonderful experience. I mean, there's been plenty more, but, when you're a young kid going to a game, it's a privilege, and, I was with my whole family. It was pretty cool.
So. Absolutely. Brad, thanks for the call.
Brad, thanks for the call.
This is a game I dug more into yesterday because we had a call about that on the afternoon show. And what I find most fun about this – so, Derek, the starting quarterbacks for this game were Bob Greasy for Miami and then Joe Ferguson for the Bills.
Right.
I want you to guess how many picks Joe Ferguson threw.
Four.
Five. They win that game 17-7.
I have a sense of the direction you're going here.
So the Bills win that game 77. It's the opener to the 1980 season. They stop the losing streak at 21, so it only goes to 20. They score 14 points in the fourth quarter, and Fergie throws five picks. And this is where me and Mike Schopp are in lockstep with this. It is my favorite thing to go back into some of these older games. And older, I do mean around like the 80s into the 70s and 60s. And I'm a bit of a historian with all this stuff, and I do really enjoy it. But my favorite aspect, Derek, everyone turned the ball over at such an obnoxious rate. It is stunning that turnovers ever became the bugaboo that they are in the modern NFL. Ferguson throws five picks. They win 17-7. Like, you would not know he does that.
Well, the Bills' defense also comes away with four picks of their own on that day.
It's incredible.
Against two quarterbacks.
Don Strock, baby.
And the weirdest thing about all of it, though, is like having an opportunity to look at any of these like older games and how wild the box scores are.
It's the best. It's the best.
Or even, ready? You don't even have to go that far. In the 90s, there are times where Jim Kelly's throwing like 20-plus interceptions in a year.
Mm-hmm. It's weird. His first ever game he starts with, I think, is like the 86 opener. He has almost 300 yards. His completion percentage is like 70, has three touchdowns. And you're like, that's a modern NFL stat. Like, that's incredible. Yeah. And you're right. And then there will be seasons where he has like one more touchdown than picks. But it didn't matter. Like, him, Elway, they were considered, you know, the cream of the crop of their position. It was such a wildly different game. But a game that, like, if I ever could, I'd want to go sit down for like a 1977 game. Just to legitimately feel the difference of the sport from what it is now.
Yeah.
Because they are just wildly different sports in many aspects, although in some, they are exactly the same.
In some, they're exactly the same, but not very often.
803-0550, again, the number two call. We're going to take a quick time out here. When we come back, Sal Capaccio will also join the show. We'll get, of course, his favorite memories for Highmark Stadium from both a kid and now, of course, when he's working. And also, Bills returning to practice today as they get ready for Sunday, 425, hosting the New York Jets. That's all coming up next when we come back. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Capaccio.
On WGR.
Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. My head hurts. We just spent the last 30 seconds going through playoff scenarios for the Bills. Sal Capaccio here on the Western Hotline.
And then
Sal,
I threw a fifth one in there to cause migraines for both of us.
I think we got to the point where the only team the Bills can't play in the wild card round is the Chargers. I'm not 100% sure on that. Again, my head hurts. How you doing?
Ooh. It's good. Yeah, I think you're right about that. I'm doing well. Happy New Year to you guys. Yeah, I think that's right.
And that's right. The literal only scenario, Sal, and it's this. The Bills have to win. Chargers lose. Texans win. Jaguars lose. Texans move to the 3. Bills move to the 6. It's the only way they could face the Texans. I need a Tylenol. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Yeah.
No, that's right. That's right. They could still play Denver.
Oh, yeah.
They could still play anybody. They could still play New England at Jacksonville. So right now, the odds are most likely at Jacksonville, second most likely at New England. And then a whole bunch of other things are kind of up in the air. I think Denver would probably fall next, but it could still be Pittsburgh or, you know, Baltimore.
Yeah.
Now, I think that most conventional wisdom Bills fans, not everybody agrees with this, would say you don't want Houston, you don't want Baltimore, right? For two different reasons. Houston because of their pass rush, Baltimore because of their run game. There's no doubt about that. Houston, as you said, it would take a bit to get there because I would think Jacksonville is going – They're going to try and win the division. They're going to try and beat Indy. They're going to finish as the 3.
And but anything can happen. Tennessee.
Tennessee.
They're facing Tennessee,
And Houston's facing Indy. That's right. Yep. Okay, so you probably think Jacksonville wins that, but weirder things have happened. Look at Atlanta against the Rams the other night, right? I mean, weirder things have happened. Okay, so then you have, if Houston sees that happening, here's the thing, though. If Houston sees at 1 o'clock that Jacksonville has things in hand, does Houston start to pull their starters? All of a sudden, they lose because of it. Chargers are already resting their guys. We know that.
Yep.
I could see a scenario where the Bills jump into the 5.
Oh, I could too. And Sal, kind of a fun thing for Bills fans as well. For the most part, we will know what the Bills need to do and where they can go because they're the 425 game. And most of these games that we'll keep an eye on are the 1 o'clock ones, obviously outside of the AFC North matchup for Sunday Night Football.
That's right. So what's interesting is, and I don't think you can tell, if the Bills, when the Bills go out to play the Jets, I think we'll talk about this. I think they're going to treat it like they want to give guys rest, but they want to win the game. It's the last game at Highmark, and the guys who go out there, they're trying to win the game for sure. So if Mitch Trubisky's out there for most of the game, and he's looking to throw touchdown passes, no doubt. So I think you're trying to win the game. I think what happens then is if you win and you know that win gets you to the five, well, then we all become big Pittsburgh Steelers fans, I guess, right? I think.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
On Sunday night, because you wouldn't know your opponent till Sunday night, though, if that happens. That's the issue.
Yeah, it's good. That's where I'm excited for Sunday, because, Sal, I'm right there with you. I think the Bills are going to, for the most part, treat this as they can rest guys. Now, it's not a preseason game. They're not going to have 90 guys on the roster. They're going to have to kind of, play a little bit with the roster. We all look at Allen, but does not mean the entire offensive line is going to get changed out. It could, but does not mean it can. But that is going to be something to keep an eye on. And, Sal, I do wonder, on a Wednesday, sitting here now, who do you want the Bills to go play? Like, who is the team you want to see them the most go to?
I don't know. I go back and forth between New England and Jacksonville. I really do. There's different reasons for both, which is I think you feel they can really match up with New England, and they're not super explosive like on the outside without Mac Hollins, but they have Drake May, and he's amazing. And Drake May he deserves every bit of the MVP love he's getting. There's no doubt about it. They don't have this incredible run game, but they can rip off explosive runs, and they play good sound defense, but it's not like something like you see in Houston, right? Okay, so that's that. But guys, I just can't stomach the thought of going there and losing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's just it's in my brain. I mean, you lose in any game, it's tough. But you go there and lose after the reign that they had, then you took them over, and then they have Drake May, they win the division. That there also is a great thought of go there and beat them and say, who cares about your division?
That's, we can beat you, right? That's where I'm at, Sal. Like, I know Jacksonville's the most likely, but in my head, I'm like, you know what? Let them have the AFC East. We've gotten it 5 years in a row. Maybe you need a little, humble yourself, and then just go back there, beat them again, and be like, cool, have the MVP. Have the division.
Yeah.
You didn't even win a playoff game. Good for you. I need that a little bit in my body. I know Jacksonville's likely, but ugh.
I know Jacksonville is like this really scary monster right now, like the way they're playing. Like, that's the other part. Like, everybody says, look how they're playing. That's real. I mean, they have just been putting it on teams lately, and good teams. I mean, they scored 34 against the Broncos defense, right? I mean, like, they put it on good teams. They scored 35 against the Chargers defense. I also know that, like, they've also had moments this year, and they're on a roll right now, but that doesn't have to stay. Last week, they struggled a bit. They finally came back. They beat Indy. I also think that, you look at them, they are very good against the run. They're not a huge, great pass rush team, but their pass defense is good. Like, they get interceptions. They can take the ball away. If you go down to Florida, you have good conditions. I don't know. I think the Bills, I give the Bills a good chance there, because I think it's a quarterback they've faced. And I know they've lost to Trevor Lawrence. I get it. It's a quarterback they've faced. They've seen him. It's a first-time head coach. So there's a lot that goes into all this,
There's a lot to go into everything about this season, Sal, especially with how crazy it has been. We've talked about this how many times throughout the season, Sal. The Bills could absolutely run through the AFC because everyone's got questions this time around. But when it comes to the Bills themselves, they are a team that we saw the worst of it this past weekend when they score 12 points. It's frustrating how the offense can't get things done and at least finish it off. But here you are once again. The Bills have one of the highest ceilings, I should say, of anybody in the National Football League, and here they are sitting playing on the road.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the debate is, and I think this is a really good exercise, is it better to have Kansas City and Cincinnati and maybe even the Ravens, who knows now, out of the way versus going on the road three straight games? I don't know. I think going on the road three straight games is tough. It's really tough. I think it's tough in the regular season. Now you're placing good teams in the playoffs. That's all, there's something about playing at home here in Buffalo and people coming here, the mental aspect of it going on the road is tough. So, yeah, I think it's a very, very tough proposition. In a vacuum, the Bills can win any week against any of these teams. They can also lose any week against any of these teams. I'd like their chances a lot more if they're at home, because we've seen them on the road this year just be very Jekyll and Hyde.
Yeah, absolutely. Sal Capaccio here on the Wester Hotline. Sal, the Bills are getting back to practice today. We have mentioned it already. This kind of might be a little bit closer to a preseason game than a regular season game. But, of course, always injuries to keep an eye on, especially late in the year. Dalton Kincaid, really, I think, chief among them.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's two parts of this week's injury report. Number one is, how are guys trending at practice? And number two is, what will the team do Sunday with them, even if they are trending to play? Because I think if anybody is notable that's, you know, getting there, you might just back off on them anyway. And I think Dalton Kincaid is first and foremost for this, Zach, which is, if Dalton Kincaid, like, to me, you don't play him this week. There's no reason to.
Right, yeah.
There's no reason at all. You give him another week. I don't think you play Daquan Jones or Jordan Poyer. The guys that have been injured, there's no reason to play them this week. That, to me, the way I look at it. Now, if they're super healthy and they want to get a few reps in, that's how the team has to decide it, with the medical staff, with the player, with the coaching staff. But I just think that you go into this game with anybody who is – here's how you start. Everybody says, who are they going to rest? Who are they not going to rest? Are they going to rest players? The first thing you do if you're Sean McDermott is you go to who's injured. And that's how you have to start with who should rest and who shouldn't. All the other stuff about, well, back off this guy, give him some rest, you got to decide first who's banged up that has to sit out, because there's only so many spots you can not play people. Everybody else has to play. You only get 48 guys to dress. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's not like you have a preseason roster at your disposal. You don't. You get two elevations. Four guys are out of elevations. It's not easy to do. So I think the first thing you do is you look at who's been injured. Dalton Kincaid, Daquan Jones, Jordan Poyer, Matt Prater, all these people. Terrell Bernard, we already know, is out for the game. That's where you start with, what should we do? And then you get to Josh Allen, of course. We know that he's healthy enough to play. But to me, he starts. He gets his starting streak to continue. And then you get him out of there very quickly.
So because you can't sit everybody, this isn't a college roster. You only have the 53 and actually the game day 45. I would imagine that James
48.
Cook. Oh, 48. Excuse me. Sorry about that.
Yep.
But I would imagine, though, that James Cook probably gets some run here against the Jets. They'll see and they'll know entering that game just how much he needs to get in order to get past Jonathan Taylor and how much he would have to play. Obviously, Derrick Henry could sneak up and steal it in Sunday Night Football, but I don't think they're going to really account for that. But James Cook, I would imagine, probably gets some run here against the Jets.
I think this depends a little bit on what happens with Jonathan Taylor at 1 o'clock. Mm-hmm. So Jonathan Taylor's 47 yards behind James Cook. If Jonathan Taylor passes James Cook, I fully expect James Cook to play enough to pass him. Like, James Cook has said, he didn't say this to me. I heard the TV broadcast a few weeks ago when they did a TV production meeting. They asked him, I think it was maybe Ian Eagle and JJ, like, is the rushing title important to you? He said, yes, it's important to him. It's important to his family. And I think it's important to the Bills and their organization. Like, of course, the Bills, you know, the last time that a rushing title leader was in the 70s, right? That was OJ.
It was OJ, yeah.
But the last time they led the league in rushing, by the way, I looked it up, it was 2016 with LeSean.
Okay.
They led the league in yards per game. They have a chance to do that too. But I think it's important to the Bills. I think it's important to James Cook. What did they do last year, week 18? The game meant nothing. They pulled James Cook out. They get to the goal line. They put him back in just so he can get the rushing TD record.
Right, exactly.
That's right.
So, like, they've shown that when guys are going for stuff, they're not going to just pull back, right? And I do that, like that.
They've always kind of tried to do right, if you will, by the guys. You remember a few years ago, they tried to get another touchdown pass to, like, another guy to have that the number of touchdown passes to different players, right? Like, these are things that they'll be cognizant of, but you have to thread the needle of, at what point do you put a player at risk, and you don't want to do that. Because you also have to remember, even if, let's just say, Jonathan Taylor runs for 70 yards, James Cook needs 30 or 40 yards. He goes out there and gets it. Well, you also have Derrick Henry right now is 150 behind, and he plays later. So he could catch up, but then I guess you just say, well, if he does, he does, and he has a great game. There's nothing we can do, but I think you treat James Cook depending on what Jonathan Taylor does. The question for me is, if Jonathan Taylor doesn't pass James Cook, does he play at all?
That is exactly what I was thinking of. If the Colts have a bad game, Taylor doesn't do anything, do they just go, all right, Cook, you're not playing. Like, we're rolling.
They might.
Johnson,
they might. I mean,
Davis.
or he may want to, you know, pat it a little bit before Derrick Henry, and he might want a few reps, you know, just to get you know, hey, I want to go out there, play the last game in Highmark Stadium. I think all that stuff has to be baked in.
Yeah, absolutely. I selfishly want Cook to get the rushing title because I want to have a conversation in the summer, and I need that rushing title for me to really kind of lean into it. But that is a topic for a few months from now.
Yeah,
Sal, you got it, buddy. Another player to kind of keep an eye on, I think, for Bills fans, especially over, I would say, the last 2 months or so, Keon Coleman. He is starting to rack up the healthy inactives. I imagine he will play quite a bit on Sunday just due to the, you know, the depth and wanting to sit guys. Sal, right now, really, like, where do we sit with Coleman? It's a second year, second round pick for the Bills, but it already feels like it is trending the way of Kyer Elam.
I agree with you. There's a lot of decisions that have to be made in the offseason about this, and probably a lot of conversations about it, a lot of evaluation and analysis on all of this. There's so many different variables involved, and, you know, Keon's still a young player, and you hope that he can kind of figure it out a little bit. I think there's, you know, the stuff off the field is leading to the stuff on the field, meaning I don't think they can trust him right now, right? If you can't do the things you're supposed to do off the field, and he's been late, and then he's not producing enough to justify putting him on the field if you can't trust him like that. That's number one. Number two is, though, you get to the offseason, and do you feel that he can take that next step? And you don't just want to, you know, say, okay, we're moving on from this player after 2 years. Kyer Elam, remember, that was the third year. After three years, they moved on from him. And he never had any. Kyer Elam, he was always raved about his work. Kyer Elam was a very hard worker. He just never was good enough to be able to, you know, be on the field enough. And that was just a guy that they drafted that never turned out from that aspect. And I think Keon's a little different here. Now, what's interesting to me, guys, is I think Keon, this is a really great opportunity if they want for him to get on the field. As long as he's doing everything right off the field, you get him on the field this week and say, okay. Remember last year, like, he played a lot against New England. They had a ton of targets. He only caught a couple balls.
Yeah.
Now, Trubisky was the quarterback that day, and it wasn't the best day for everybody offensively. But I think this is the week where maybe you play Keon Coleman and say, show us what you can do if you want us to think about dressing you during the playoffs.
Sal Capaccio here on the Westsur Hotline. As it is the final game, at least scheduled, crazy things have happened. They could move up a seed. We can't guarantee it here. But, Sal, with it being what is expected to be the final game at Highmark Stadium, we've been talking a little bit about memories. And, Sal, you've been working on the Bills Radio Network for quite a while now, and I would imagine you have plenty of memories before that as well. What are the ones that really hit home for you about Highmark Stadium?
Well, number one, and I know that it's diverging a bit from kind of how we talk about this, but I got a chance to play there, guys. I played a high school championship game there.
There you go.
And it was amazing. And, you know, I remember coming out of the tunnel and seeing the blue and gold, and Zach's also a Cleve Hill alum, right? And seeing the blue and gold out there, and, you know, people rooting for it. It was just super cool to come out of the tunnel as a player. It really was, right? As a young kid, I was, 16 years old at the time. So that was awesome. But 2 years before that was my first ever game. It always sticks out to me. It was in the snow against New England. They lost. They had to win the last two games of 87. They didn't. They lost to New England in a low scoring game. That was my first ever game there. And I remember that. I remember exactly where I sat, kind of right below where the writer's press box is right now over there on the Bills, the tunnel side in the corner, sat there. And then nothing will ever top 51-3 to me. I was there. I was a senior in high school. It was 41-3 at halftime. It was a party the entire second half. I mean, you guys remember the perfect game, what that was like. When you just knew, like, you knew at halftime the Bills are rolling in this game. Like, there's just the Patriots dynasty is dead, right, and buried, and the Bills are fine. And, like, you knew the whole second half to revel in it. That was it going to a Super Bowl. Like, you knew the whole second half, we knew this team was going to their first ever Super Bowl. It was amazing, right? That's the best memory I ever have there. Going as a fan, the perfect game is one of them as a broadcaster though. And like as a game itself, as a moment, I mean, Nyheim Hines after DeMar,
oh, right? Yeah.
Incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely incredible. There's been some great ones over the years. Just for me, just watching and being on the field as Josh Allen and seeing some of the things he does has been amazing. So, you know, walk off field goal against Miami in the snow and snow angels, super cool. The snow game in 2017, all those kinds of things come to mind for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I never played football at Cleve Hill. My brother did, though. He got to do that. He's talked about it being one of those surreal moments. So, absolutely. I know exactly what you're talking about, Sal. Just one last thing here before we let you go. Obviously, we're all going to be off tomorrow for the New Year's. Friday, you're going to have Sean McDermott, of course, and then any other schedule bits for fans to keep an eye on the rest of the week.
Yeah, well, they're going to be practicing today and tomorrow like a normal Wednesday and Thursday. But as you said, we won't really have anything on the radio again until Friday when Sean McDermott joins me on the Extra Point Show to give an injury update. And we'll talk about the Jets game and how they're going to handle it. Maybe we'll learn more today. Mm-hmm. Sean McDermott talks to us in about an hour down at practice, guys.
All right, sounds good. Sal, Happy New Year, man. We'll talk again soon.
All right, Happy New Year to you, everybody back at the station, and of course, all of our listeners out there. Thank you so much. Really appreciate everybody listening all year long and into 2026.
Thank you, brother. Talk soon. Thanks,
Sal. Yep.
Sal Capaccio there on the Wester Hotline. We'll take a quick timeout, 803-0550, the number to call. If you want to get your favorite stadium memories in as we, at least for us, me and Derek, we wrap up our time here on the show this week. We took some calls in the first segment. We'll keep doing that as we roll along. At 11:30, though, we'll get a little bit of Bandits action going as well. Steve Bermel will join the show. Bandits finally played another game as we're doing this weekly check-in with them. They did win it. We'll get more on that coming up at 11:30. But outside of that, the show is yours. Want to give your memories? We'd love to hear them. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it, stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Ready to take your game day to the next level? Enter online now at WGR550.com for your chance to win $300 tailgate tray certificate from Alibaba Kebab to feed 12 football families. Each Friday, a winner is going to be announced during Football Friday with Shope and the Bulldog. Fire up your taste buds at any of their three locations.
Last segment of hour number one here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Derek Kramer, Zach Jones, thanks to everyone that's been calling in. We'll keep taking those calls on the other side, but it is imperative to note that there's a very important game going on here today. The Buffalo Sabres are going for 10 in a row, and why is Zach not agreeing with me?
I thought you were going to mention the Citrus Bowl, Derek. Texas, Michigan? Really?
Okay.
It's a massive game. 3 o'clock ABC.
There it is.
I'm completely joking. The Cotton Bowl is also on today. 7:30, Miami, Ohio State. I'm going to watch Texas, Michigan because I'm here and it's on at 3. Past that, I mean, I mentioned it. Like when I came back from vacation, these minor bowl games,
But it's your guys. It's Texas.
Sure.
Hook them.
I mean, yeah, hook them. But like, I'm cool if bowl games kind of slowly disappear.
Oh, how dare you.
I know that's very humbug of me. But I mentioned it. Like,
especially you.
I know. I'm cool with the smaller programs, mid-majors, them having bowl games. I love it. I'm all for it. It's that extra game, extra exposure. For many of them, it might be their first or second game on national TV all year. I'm game for it.
You have a chance to do. Well, the team has a chance to do something that less than half of schools get to.
Right.
End their season on a win.
Right.
That part alone should be enough. I'm here for the majesty of bowl season, and I hate what has happened to it and the damage that's been done.
Think the playoff for that? Huh? I mean, the playoffs effectively kill
bowl season.
Yes,
You thank the playoff for that, and you also thank some of the draft decisions that are made by players now more days. Protecting their contract, everything, their draft value, everything like that. And you also have to thank the coaches that get to jump ship without penalty. And
have been able to for years.
And have been able to well before the transfer portal was a thing for that as well. Like, it was a slow process, but it finally happened where the stones have crumbled. Those things were, like, chipping away a little bit with, like, just tiny, like, hammers, not even a sledgehammer.
I'm telling you, though, guardrails in college sports, everything would be fixed. We wouldn't have former NBA players trying to get into college for college basketball. A little guardrails would be fine. I think even bowl season, like little guardrails. Even if it's you can't transfer 2 years in a row kind of deal, I think it would fix so many things. But
I'm here for the majesty.
It's college sports, and they just throw everything up in the air, and they go, I don't know what's going on, guys. It's crazy.
I do love the majesty of bowl season. I love that the Pop-Tarts Bowl has kind of made it, like, its own big deal.
Yeah, they're fun with it.
They're fun with it. And then, of course, the idea of, college schools and programs are, like, huddled around the TV, like, all right, what bowl game are we getting? Where are we going?
Right. You wish it had the NCAA tournament feel of like teams just waiting to see what they get. They usually know, 2 to 3 games, like what they can end up getting.
UB gets the Bahamas Bowl last year.
I've mentioned it, though. I haven't really liked many bowl games. I love when the mid-majors get them. That's fine. But like, outside of the big New Year's Day bowls, most of them don't have the same luster. Now that we're getting more backups playing and stuff like that, it has definitely lost its luster. But Cotton Bowl tonight, Ohio State and Miami. And, of course, if you want to make fun of me with Texas and Michigan, the Citrus Bowl at 3 o'clock. 803-0550, the number two call. We'll keep taking your calls on favorite stadium memories as, for all intents and purposes, most likely Sunday is going to be the final game at the current Highmark Stadium. Gary, John, we'll get to you and many others as we come back. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive X Point Show on WGR.
Here's McCoy breaking a tackle. McCoy into the end zone, and Buffalo wins it. Incredible.
That is the snow game, 2017. Bills over the Colts, 13-7. LeSean McCoy did everything that day. 32 for 156 and a touchdown. In terms of throwing the ball, they did do a little bit of that.
As a matter of fact, Nathan Peterman throws a touchdown in that game.
He throws a touchdown, yeah.
He throws a touchdown in the game.
Calvin Benjamin, 3 for 38 and a touchdown.
And yet it's not the best throw of the game.
No, it's Webb.
It's Webb.
Joe Webb
to Deontay Thompson.
I think what's crazy, the lasting legacy of that game was actually how important it was.
Yes, but who could see who it was going to in that game? All you knew is that, okay, a red jersey caught that football.
That's all you got. Deontay Thompson?
Yep.
Yeah. That game will always be funny to me because I remember when I was not at the game. I was watching it at home, and I just thought how, like, basically Looney Tunes it was that game was even occurring. And, like, what, the following week it was essentially, no, they really, I mean, we knew going in they needed to win that game. It was very important to a potential playoff run.
Right.
It became vitally important after they'd won it. You're like, oh, well, thank goodness for LeSean McCoy.
It actually happens that way.
Oh, man. 803-0550, the number to call. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here talking lasting memories of Highmark Stadium as for, in all likelihood, Sunday will be the final game for the Bills there as they move into their new home starting next year. We promise we get back to your phone calls, and we'll do that right here, starting with Gary on the line. Gary, how are we doing?
I'm doing great here in Omaha, Nebraska. Happy holidays, my hometown, Buffalo, New York. The 1990 AFC Championship game. Flying back with my sister from Omaha, my brother flying in from St. Louis. On the connecting flight from Chicago to Buffalo, walking through middle class, there's Bill Walsh. And I stopped, shook his hand, and said, hello, coach, going to see our hometown's championship game. He looked at me and said, I think you'll be all right. Going to the game, waiting for our ride to go to the stadium. It's freezing cold. And I'm telling my brother while we're waiting out in the cold, savor this day. This could be our city's greatest sports day ever. Our first home championship game since the 66 AFL championship game in the Rock Pile when Len Dawson and Mike Garrett got us. And this was our first home championship game since then. The day was cold. The game was easy, and the second half was just one big celebration of a city going to our first Super Bowl and winning on national TV. And 4 days earlier, we had just dropped some bombs, and the Gulf War started.
We were at
war for the first time since Vietnam, and everything was just one big celebration of our city in that stadium. All day long.
Yeah, Gary, thanks for the call. That is right. I always forget about that because then you get to the Super Bowl, of course, and then there is the very iconic national anthem because of that whole situation going right around there. 1990 AFC Championship, Sal talked about it as well. The big celebration. Derek, have you ever actually gone back and been able to watch this game, like on YouTube? It is hysterical. Watching the Raiders, like, very clearly have no idea what to do. Like, almost immediately they have – and, of course, we know the score – in all likelihood, of course, they didn't know what to do. But you're just seeing guys, I mean, hands on hips, like the second drive. And they're like, what is going on here? They keep coming at us. They don't stop. It's incredible to watch. I think Howie Long has like a pitcher in his face, eyes wide. And he's just like, again?
again.
And it's just, it's incredible. Looking at some of the stats, Thurm goes over 100 yards and a touchdown. Kenneth Davis has 3 touchdowns on 10 carries. Kelly goes over 300, 2 touchdowns. The Bills get 5 picks, 6 picks in this game, excuse me. The starter has 5. Just an incredible.
Well, there's a game where they throw 5 interceptions and lose accordingly.
Just a dominating performance. And, you know, as the caller mentioned, by halftime, it's a party. It's because it's 41-3. It's just a complete butt whooping. And, I'm not alive for this. It's probably, though, the greatest sports moment in Buffalo history, in modern Buffalo sports history. I don't want to completely exclude the AFL championships. But in modern, Buffalo history, that's probably the moment, is just the euphoric feeling of, we're going to kick the Giants bleep in a minute here. Look at this game. It doesn't happen, but you still have that. And it's at home. It's incredible. I think a lot of people, like, that's the game people were envisioning for this year.
I would imagine that the perfect offensive game probably has something to do with this, too. In a more modernized, less we're actually going to the Super Bowl, because that's what the stakes were that day.
Mm-hmm.
But they smoke New England, put them back down saying, no, you're not ready yet.
Oh, yeah.
And up next is, okay, this team looks different from last year. They are better than last year. One ill-fated divisional game later, but, in that moment, you're probably thinking, oh, they're good. We're all the way back again. Let's go.
And I like that you brought that point up about the 21 playoffs, because that season was much like this one. Very frustrating. You know, it takes the Tampa overtime loss for many of us to think, ooh, they're back. Here we go. Going into the playoffs, Derek, I'll be completely frank with you. I was like, yeah, they'll beat New England. I don't see anything past this. And then they whooped on New England, and they looked so dominant on offense. And you're just like, oh, okay.
Oh, they could be spicy.
And then, of course, look, they do lose 13 seconds, but there's a reason why most of us still talk about that team like the team that should have won the ring, is because how they even looked in that loss. So, and that's where it kind of is those playoffs. I know it's an entirely different team, different talent on the roster, the whole thing. But it's why I also won't totally shut the door on this season. Of course, they're going to the playoffs. You shouldn't.
Right.
Let's see how the ride ends. But that season is kind of why, like, I won't shut the door entirely, is because going into that playoff, I didn't really expect too much. I kind of was like, all right, they're going to be a little bit of a roller coaster here. 2020 was the high point. We're going to, kind of go back down a little bit to earth. Hopefully 22 is better. And instead it was just, oh, okay, they're a fire hose. Like, here we go. And I'm not saying it could definitely happen this year, but I've seen the stats, what they look like with Dalton Kincaid in the roster and when they don't. And if they're going to play it, like, just, we need you as healthy as possible, perfect. And I also mentioned it on the overtime show, Brandon Cooks. Look, we didn't get a lot of it from the offense, but I was really into the fact that they were able to stretch the field with Cooks against a very talented Eagles defense, pass defense especially, and he didn't even have Dalton Kincaid in the game. So I don't know.
Right.
It's something I've kind of leaned into. I'm glad I've also seen, like, guys like Dan Orlovsky kind of point that out. He did yesterday on One Bills Live of, like, hey, it's not everything, but it might be something.
There might be something. There's still some juice left, and we'll see. We'll have to see how it all goes, but obviously, the only difference is that those future memories right now are not going to be in the building.
Yeah. Back to the phones. John is up next. John, how we doing?
Great. How are you guys?
Doing well.
Excellent. Hey, just, this may seem a little esoteric at this point, but, every single game that I've ever been to at that stadium has just been awesome, and it's just representative of the community that supports this team. And I've been to a few NFL games elsewhere, right? And I've never seen a community back their sports team like Buffalo backs their Bills, right? And it's just been such a great ride in this stadium through all the changes in roster, all the changes, or at least one change in ownership, right? But if I had to pick one game that I was at, and I was sitting almost midfield, was the 93 comeback game against the Oilers. It was just such a huge experience. We were even thinking about going and leaving. We're like, well, wait a minute. We got to stick around for this. And it was just the stadium exploded. And it was absolutely such a great time to be a Bills fan, and great time to be in that stadium.
Absolutely, John. Thanks for the call. That is a game I always enjoy when the comeback is brought up, Derek. mainly because, and I've mentioned it about this season, that I think if the Bills were to go on and win the Super Bowl, people would probably change the tune of how they felt for most of the year.
Absolutely, like lying right. to everybody, including themselves.
And I'm not judging, because how many people do you know that mentioned, I was at 93 and I stayed the entire time? And you're like, statistically, probably didn't.
How many of you are there?
Yeah, how many of you did you lie? And I'm not judging. I think that's funny. I enjoy it.
You've even said on air, if the Bills do win it all this year, you're going to say, I never said any of those things.
Gaslight, gatekeep, girl boss. Let's roll. I'm fine with that. It is what it is. But, you know, I will mention, though, in 93, and the reason why I'm saying this in like kind of like a loving fashion, if I was at that game in 93, I probably would have left at halftime. It is what it is. You know, you're getting blown out. It's cold. I'm going home. I respect a lot of people that really did stay. I know both.
Get over the line of gaslight, keep girl boss.
There you go. Rules to live by. You got to live by it. But, I know both my parents went. They were not together at the time. They end up meeting later. But both of them were like, yeah, I left. Of course I did. They were with entirely different groups. Like, yeah, I left. My dad was like, I had the flu. I was out. They weren't winning. I was gone.
Yep. But I also do wonder, though. This day and age, they're not allowed back in.
Right.
That is the other part of it. They are like base coaches rounding third. Seeing fans trying to flock back in, they're like, all right, come on, let's go. Something weird's happening. Get back in here if you're actually thinking about it. We're not going to try to stop you. We don't have the manpower, first of all. And second of all, something cool is happening.
This is really cool. Get back in there.
Yeah, something cool's happening. Mm-hmm. Let's go. Get back in here.
And we kind of saw it week one this year where people were like, wait, what's going on? What's happening? No.
But you're not going to, like this day and age, you're not going to be allowed back in.
No. No.
That sort of moment is... It's a one of one.
Yeah. It's a moment really from a different age. I mean, you even look at it now. I mean, we mentioned Bills Mafia is created during the drought. Those were games that weren't always getting sold out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for at the time, Rich Stadium, it wasn't always happening. And so, yeah, like it was a different time where, yeah, you get everybody back in here. Nowadays, you're right. I mean, there's no chance at all. 803-0550, again, the number to call. We keep going back to the phones. Bruce is up next. Bruce, how we doing?
Hey, Happy New Year, guys.
You as well.
I'm lucky and blessed enough to have lived through most of what you guys are talking about. being on the sideline, or not on the sideline, but about 13 rows up and watching Reggie McKenzie point at the Miami Dolphins while the goalposts are going up, and he's got this cat grin all over his face just pointing at him. And, of course, at the Raiders game, I was freezing my rear end off and stayed at that game. But my brother and I did leave at the greatest comeback, and that was a blackout game. It wasn't shown in Buffalo. So we're driving home listening to the radio, and all of a sudden it's like, Canada. Let's go to Canada. The game's on in Canada. So we drove to Canada and watched Norway kick the field goal. But I digress for a moment. If you want to celebrate the stadium, how about driving statisticians absolutely crazy? Since 72, the total number of yards, both offense and what the other team did. Total number of pick sixes, both offense against defense. Shortest drive, longest drive, all that good stuff. All the total stats since the beginning of the stadium. What do you guys think? I'll hang up and I'll listen.
Bruce, I love that idea. I wonder, though, obviously they've known for a little while this is going to be the last season. I wonder if the Bills have been doing something like that. They've got enough employees just to have somebody just keep totaling this up. We get it in the off season and then just keep track of this season. I wonder if they're doing that stuff. I could see there is at least a Bills fan out there that is doing this, that is prepared for on Sunday or whenever the final game is. Here are the total numbers. That would scare me. The stadium opens in 73.
Yes.
That would frighten me. Even a stadium opening in like 2000 and closing in 2025, I'd be like,
That's a lot of numbers.
It's a lot of numbers. I'm not a math guy. Get out of here.
Not a math guy.
Give me in 73. Oh, boy. I mean, oh, man. I think it's going to be fun. I was very nervous, Derek, you know, coming into this final game a little bit, you know, just because the buildup to this season was the storybook potential of hosting an AFC championship game and going to a Super Bowl.
Storybook style of doing this. So, like, you've got to be able to close it out with the historical thing, even if it's only a divisional game, make sure you win it, mm-hmm. go out with the win in the playoffs, treat everyone to it. I think that's where a little bit of the frustration lies with me this season with them, is that that didn't happen. But the other part of it is something that they could not control. Realistically, a 11 or 12 win team is threatening for a division title. The Patriots played a bunch of nobodies.
And they basically didn't trip outside of like really early in the season when they lose to Vegas, which is what, week one or two?
Week one.
Yeah.
They opened the season losing to Vegas. But then they just rifle off wins, including one against Buffalo that starts a win streak for them that was obnoxious and one that ultimately does them in. I don't know what you do from there. But now it's like, okay, maybe you can climb to the 5 seed. Wacky things can happen in the playoffs, and then you can get back into Highmark Stadium. It's possible. It's doable. Am I banking on it? You said you're not a numbers guy. I'm not either, but the numbers will tell me that's not very likely.
Right, it's not likely.
I know what they're saying to me.
Now, if they're the 5 seed, I think many people have much more in-depth conversations of that, especially if it's Pittsburgh and you're the 5, and then, you know, I don't even know how that could work, but like Houston's at New England, and then you'll have Chargers and Jacksonville. You could sit there, and even now, you can have an honest conversation of, do all 3 road teams win? We could see it. Then it all of a sudden becomes like, oh, okay, maybe we'll get at least one more in here. But if you're the 5, it would take the 6 and the 7 both advancing and one of them and I think you would even have to just be 5 and 7 in an AFC championship. I don't even think it could be 5 and 6. So it would take a lot. But I was worried that people would be very frustrated by it. I'm still somewhat worried that people are going to be agitated if ultimately it comes to fruition that we've talked about with Sal and talked about it, you know, today especially, that most of the starters don't play. Like, yeah, they're wearing the red helmets and that's going to be really cool and that's going to be a nice little send-off for the stadium. But it's ultimately Mitch Trubisky playing at quarterback. No disrespect to Trubisky, but he's not Josh Allen. I mean, to many Bills fans, no matter your age, he is your favorite Bill of all time. I've mentioned a lot. He has sort of, in some ways, kind of saved my fandom with the Bills, where, yeah, I'd be proud to be from Buffalo and I'd be a Bills fan, but I wouldn't be where I'm at now with them. And so, I'm still somewhat a little bit nervous to see how the reaction will be if you know, Josh goes out there, takes one snap, hands it off to Cook or whoever it be, and then he's like, all right, give me my hat. I'm out.
Give me my hat. I'm out. I don't know. Maybe he doesn't want to.
Oh, he may not. I don't think he really has much of a choice.
No, he doesn't.
He has taken a beating this year, 40 sacks compared to 14.
Right.
Buddy, get on the bench.
Buddy, get on
the bench. We will see you next week.
And that's going to be a little bit of a sad thing. But, you know, like I said, there's a non-zero path that they could host another game. Right now, though, they're in the lowest seed possible. So it don't look good.
It does not look good. 803-0550, again, the number to call. I want to get your thoughts in on the Bills closing up, in all likelihood, this iteration of Highmark Stadium on Sunday at 425 against the New York Jets. We will also get some Bandits talk coming up in the next segment. Steve Burnell is going to join us for a little bit on that. But we go back to the phones here right before our next timeout. Paul is up next. How are we doing, Paul?
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well.
Good, good. I just wanted to give you a little bit of perspective on that greatest NFL comeback game and mm-hmm. what happened with all the gates and everything. I actually did security for the Bills from 87 till about 2000.
Very yes. nice, very and, nice.
Yeah, and I was on the field for most of the game because I was in charge of all the non-police officer mm-hmm. security at the stadium on game day. And what happened in that Houston game was that, if you remember, there was an interception, a pick six at the start of the second half, and people just, at that point, left in droves. And the gates were completely different back then. They were older gates, and you had one turnstile to get a person out. And then at the end of the game, they had a huge swing gate that you would open to let everyone out when the game was over. Well, there were so many people packed in the turnstile gate, I had to call security operations to tell them, open up the swing gates or, you know, you're going to get somebody physically hurt.
Right, we're going to have a problem here.
And so they opened up all the swing gates. The people left in droves. Well, they left the swing gates open, so when the Bulls started coming back, they came back in droves. But there was no way that anyone was going to stop anyone from getting into the back into the stadium.
That's awesome.
We didn't have one issue after, even with people coming in, not sitting where they were supposed to sit. People were so into the game. It was fantastic.
Yeah, Paul, that's awesome. That's thanks so awesome. Much for the
call. Thank you for the perspective.
I also love, too, whenever the comeback is brought up, it is how quickly the Bills make it a game.
Yes.
They score 28 points in the third quarter. So going into the fourth, they're only down 35-31, and then they take the lead.
Considering the start of that third quarter is a pick six.
Mm-hmm. It's so funny, though. You're right. It starts the third quarter, interception 35-33. By the end of the third quarter, it's 35-31. It is so sudden, and we see these comebacks all the time, right? I mean, as Bills fans, we are now somewhat used to the insane flip of a switch where you're like, 5 minutes has gone by, how have you scored 21? Like, what is happening? Like, it's become somewhat normal. Even now, though, all these years later, it is still kind of crazy to see just how fast it flipped.
But I love how it was logistical. Mm-hmm. The swing gates so that nobody gets hurt when they're leaving.
Right.
And then, they're not coming back clearly, so we're just going to leave these open for people to get out of here. The opposite happens.
And immediately the opposite happens.
And again, you don't have the personnel to get this done.
No.
Like, we're not rejecting you at that point. That's probably what's going to happen. All right, those things are open. They're staying open now.
It's incredible. 803-0550, the number to call. We're going to take a quick time out here. When we come back, Steve Bermel on the Bandits will join us for a quick check-in on them. They finally played another game, another win for them. We'll get a deep dive in on that when we come back. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
2-1 Buffalo. They've got the ball again. Nick Weiss takes the shot. He scores! Making a double pack of Weiss's pieces.
Wow! John Gertler on the call, and that's awesome.
There we go.
Oh, yeah. Love that, actually.
Big 13-7 win for the Bandits, by the way, over Calgary. It took us a while to get to another game. They had a little bit of that holiday break and kind of ran into the issue of other people were using arenas in the sports world.
Yeah.
Finally got back to it, and the Bandits' emphatic win over Calgary.
Emphatic win over Calgary, as it is time now for the Bandits Update, brought to you by Seneca Gaming and Entertainment. Three great locations, Irving, Salamanca, and Oil Springs. We've got your game. And on the Western Hotline, we've got him back for another week here. It is Steve Bermel as part of the Bandits play-by-play crew. Steve, long time no talk. Hope you had yourself a great Christmas week, and Happy New Year to you.
Yeah, twice in a week. Hope you guys had a great Christmas as well. Looking forward to a very exciting New Year's where we don't leave the house, don't go anywhere. My kids are 6 and 8. They don't even know about New Year's.
There
the whole
go.
Staying up till midnight, not a chance. Be in bed at 8:30 or 9 like every other night, and my wife and I will probably fall asleep on the couch watching the New Year's Eve show. So a riveting time here at the Bermel household.
Score. That's what life's all about right there, brother. So Bandits, though, Steve, an emphatic win over Calgary on Sunday. And it was almost a return to form offensively for them in the way that Dane Smith explodes for 9 points here. Josh Byrne has 7 assists and 8 points in the day. It is the usual suspects doing the usual things once again for the Bandits and allowing them to get back into the win column.
Yeah, the game kind of went the way we expected. I remember when I talked last week, we talked about Calgary's goaltending, and I thought Aiden Walsh started out pretty good for them, but then ultimately the Bandits got to him. As you mentioned, the big guns got theirs, which is good to see. Always great to have those guys going, leading the offense. But the Bandits had a lot of success in transition, too. I think their first goal came from Nick Weiss, a 5-hole in transition, and that was maybe the best game the Bandits had in transition, which is interesting because Calgary's kind of known for their youth and speed. We talked about them rebuilding a little bit when I was on with you guys last week as well. But all in all, you can't ask for a better game. They win by a handful of goals. They kind of controlled it wire to wire. The way that I thought the game would kind of go against a team like Calgary, but ultimately it's a game where you don't have any concerns about the way that the Bandits played, right? They did exactly what they were supposed to do. They won in a pretty dominating fashion. You feel good about the win. 9 points for Dane, a bucket full of points for Josh. Everything kind of went to the script. And overall, if you're a Bandits fan or you're the Bandits organization, you got to be pretty satisfied with how that road trip went.
And even then, they tie the game, Calgary does, in the second quarter. But then, right before halftime, it's Clay Scanlon on the power play, gets it done, and Buffalo then retakes a lead that they would never relinquish from there. Steve, I saw something about Calgary's head coach got a little spicy after the game of, like, really not loving his team's performance and kind of called it out publicly. Did you see that one?
Excuse me. Well, yeah, they need something to get them going, right? They're off to a slow start. I don't think he would admit that they're in the same position that other people on the outside might. We talked about their struggles in goal. We talked about them kind of rebuilding. You know, they lost their two best offensive weapons, one to retirement, one to Vancouver. So, you know, I'm not surprised that he's trying to do something to get a spark. I'm sure that they're not happy with the way things are going. But, you know, for those of us on the outside, it kind of feels like what you might have expected from them this year. We kind of figured it would be a rebuilding year for Calgary. But, you know, whatever he can do to get them motivated, obviously Calgary's had some success, even fairly recently, right? You know, last year made an okay run, beat the Bandits in the championship 6 years ago. So the Roughnecks have kind of a storied history that they would want to get back to. I also love that you mentioned Clay Scanlon. For those that don't know, kind of put into a bigger role on the left side offense with Kluche leaving for Vegas. And I thought it was his best game. Not even just the scoring. For those that know the way Kyle Buchanan plays, you know, kind of call him a water bug. It's a big compliment about how quick he plays, how he's always aggressive on loose balls, a small guy that's super shifty and has a high motor. Well, now Scanlon is very similar to that play style on the left side of the offense. And you watch him go into the corner or get in front of the net and scoop a loose ball and give the offense a second chance. So not only did he have that type of game where he was scrappy, you know, winning battles and coming up with loose balls, but he found the score sheet a couple of times too. But he's a great player, and I'm glad to see him finding that kind of success because he deserves it with the way that he plays and kind of how hard he works. I guess, you know, for not to compare lacrosse to hockey, but very similar to Zach Benson, right? Like a smaller guy, plays scrappy game, and you love to see, just like when Benson scored last weekend, you love to see a player like that get rewarded with stats on the sheet. So Clay Scanlon deserves a shout-out.
Steve, you also mentioned Las Vegas there. We'll get to them in here in just a moment as the Bandits are going to be taking them on Saturday. One thing I did want to touch on, though, from this game against Calgary, as me and Derek have been doing this week, or these weekly segments, one thing that was kind of not the best, I guess, to start the season was the power play. And they only had two shots at it on against Calgary, but going 2-for-2 and really just dominating the game, it's got to be a nice sign as now we're getting into more regular play here.
For sure. I think against Halifax, they went 3-for-5. But Josh Burns said after the game, it didn't feel like they were good on the power play. And I believe they had a 5-minute power play against Halifax and didn't score. I might be wrong there. But they definitely had a 5-minute against Georgia and didn't score until after it was over. So there were some frustrations with the power play, especially with how loaded they are on offense. They want to be performing at a high clip. And it's good when you have a game that you lose. One of the things that gets pointed out is that we didn't feel like our power play was very good. And then you have such a good night on the power play the next game. It kind of goes back to what I said. The script that the Bandits would have wanted for this game is almost exactly what happened. It was a get-right game for them after a loss against a team that they should have kind of beat up on a little bit, and they kind of did do that. So, of course, you know, the power plays, special teams are big in any sport, and, you know, being 100% on the power play would be exactly what the doctor ordered. So good to hear and good to see that they kind of got that figured out going forward, because they're going to need the power play, just like in any sport. You're going to need to take advantage of those situations when they arise.
Steve Brumell on the Western Hotline as we are getting our Bandits update going on here. Steve, we mentioned it, Las Vegas coming to town in a couple of days here over the weekend, and Tucker Outlink phone night, as that is also a big deal. It's a big deal for the return for a couple of former Bandits, but also Tucker Outlink phone night.
Yeah, the GM and head coach for the Las Vegas Desert Dogs is Sean Williams. Tucker out lymphoma. Tucker is his son who passed away at 8 years old with Burkitt's lymphoma. So the Bandits have been doing a great job. You know, one of the fondest memories I have of the Bandits is the night where Tucker was at the game. So he was, you know, he was in a spot in his treatment where he was allowed to come out and be in public, and they put him up in a suite and they put him on the camera and the crowd went absolutely nuts. Just one of the fondest memories I have of all the years I've been going to Bandits games. And obviously a terrible loss to lose an eight-year-old kid, but the way that the lacrosse community comes together is incredible. And it's awesome that they're able to do it when Sean is here. And Vegas has adopted their own version of Tucker Out Lymphoma Night since Sean has gone out there. So there's multiple observances or celebrations, whatever you want to say, of Tucker's life, but also of raising awareness for pediatric cancer and raising money for Sick Kids Hospital and other pediatric cancer causes. So the Bandits do an amazing job with it. They kind of got the ball rolling, but it's crazy because if you talk to any of these players, no matter where they play now, they all grew up playing together, right? They all know each other from playing junior lacrosse together and growing up together. So the lacrosse community is super close-knit, and they always come together for this cause with Tucker Out Lymphoma Night. So you'll definitely want to be there in Buffalo for Tucker Out Lymphoma Night on Saturday.
Speaking of that, I'm glad you mentioned the wrinkle that Las Vegas does with this, because for the second year in a row, Buffalo, Las Vegas, and the Oshawa Firewolves, they will be carrying out with the Tucker Out Lymphoma Cup. So it is something that they've adopted in their own way to keep it going, but also it involves more clubs now, as obviously Vegas has Sean Williams as the coach and GM. He played in Buffalo, and Oshawa is also tied into it now as well, where they can continue this sort of thing and maybe even continue to make it bigger as the years go on.
Yeah, Oshawa tied in because Dyson Williams, Tucker's older brother,
yep,
plays for that club. So the Bandits won that cup last year. I think they were perfect in the teams that were involved in it. They won all those games. So that is, it's like a mini in-season tournament, if you will, between those teams. Just another way to honor the cause and to bring awareness to it. The cup was in Buffalo the night that they won it. I believe that the night that the Bandits won the Tucker Out Lymphoma Cup, either team could have won it, depending on who won that game, the way that the standings worked out. So that ended up being pretty cool. But just amazing to see awareness brought to such a worthy cause. And, you know, it hits home for so many of the guys, both on Buffalo and on the Vegas team, but also the whole lacrosse community. So just, it's an amazing honor. As silly as it is, as stupid as it is, I have a pin that I wear on my coat for every game with the T51 for Tucker. It's so important to the lacrosse community, and it's a great cause to, like I said, observe, celebrate, whatever you want to talk about, to celebrate the awesome life that Tucker led and the inspiration that he was, but then also to raise awareness for such a worthy cause.
Should be a wonderful night. The Bandits hosting the Desert Dogs on Saturday, 7 p.m. On the Las Vegas team, though, Steve, what should Bandit fans be expecting?
So here's what's interesting. Vegas came out this year and got mollywopped by Vancouver. They scored a few late goals to make it a little bit closer on the scoreboard, but they did not play well and kind of got rinsed a little bit by the Warriors. And that night, I believe Fraser was like a last-second scratch. So Chase Fraser injured in warm-ups and ended up not playing in that game. And now the last two games, they've played pretty well. They won 10-9 two games ago, and I think their last game was like 17-11. Over Toronto. They kind of whitewashed them a little bit. They chased Nick Rose and Holichuk came in, and there was, you know, the Rock couldn't find an answer. Both goaltenders give up eight goals in that game, but Vegas was hot as a pistol on offense, and they'll come in as a pretty high-powered offense. Bandits fans will remember Mitch Jones leading the way for Vegas. I think he had 9 points in that game last week when they scored 17. So Mitch Jones, Chase Fraser, and Chris Kluche. I think Fraser's still a little banged up. I don't know if he's going to play or not. It seems like he probably will play, especially because he played last week for them. But Fraser, I don't think, is 100%. So hopefully he's recovering well and getting healthy. But this is a high-powered offense that, you know, Vegas is 2-1 after that game against Vancouver where they kind of struggled. Goaltending is a kind of a question mark for them as well. They had former Bandit Alex Bouquet come into the game against Vancouver and play pretty well. But their starter, Landon Cowell, struggled a little bit. They drafted Caleb Kahn, this young, like, phenom goaltender, who right now is still on the practice squad. But there's a whole lot of thought out there that Vegas could kind of turn to him at some point this season, especially if more games would have went the way the first one went. But now, after back-to-back wins where they give up 9 and 11 goals respectively, maybe they just kind of let Kahn marinate, you know, on the practice squad. But goaltending, I think, would be the biggest question mark for Vegas. But their offense, man, just a potent group.
Steve, it's going to be an interesting one. It should be a raucous crowd there on Saturday night as well in Banditland. And also, it's been a while since we've had that opportunity to host the fans and the Buffalo faithful there. So that one should be a great, fantastic game. Again, in addition with Tucker Out Lymphoma Night there. Steve, thanks for coming on once again, and I hope you can max and relax for your New Year's Eve.
Thank you so much. Happy New Year to you guys. Go Sabres, go Bandits, go Bills.
That's Steve Rommel there on the West Hur Hotline as the Bandits Update is brought to you by Seneca Gaming and Entertainment, three great locations in Irving, Salamanca, and Oil Springs. We've got your game.
Real quick on hockey. We already mentioned Sabres at the Dallas Stars
tonight.
We
have not talked enough about them today, and it kind of makes me a little jumpy.
Well, it's all right. 8 p.m. tonight, 7 p.m. pregame. Something to keep an eye on, though. Canada's Canada's Olympic roster is being, I think, unveiled on TSN like as we speak. So we'll see if we can get that before the end of the show. The U.S. roster, I think, is also being unveiled today. Something to keep an eye on. Obviously, of course, with the Sabres, Tage Thompson, we'll see if he makes the roster and stuff like that. Jason Robertson, though. The forward for Dallas, who is top five in basically any meaningful statistic.
God. He's going to be so – he'll be playing so P.O. Yeah. if he doesn't get in, and we have to deal with that.
Among U.S.-born forwards this season, he is second in goals, tied fifth in assists, second in points. In terms of plus-minus, he is second. Power play goals, he is tied first, and power play assists, he is tied third. Again, this is among U.S.-born forwards this season. Stunning if he's left off the roster. And I'm really hoping he's on it, both as an American and also I want to see the Sabres get to 10, and I don't want him playing pissed off. I really, really don't. We'll take a quick time out here. We'll get you ready. Sabres Live coming up at the top of the hour. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here in the Northtown Automotive X Point Show on WGR. Quick final segment here as we wrap up a New Year's Eve edition here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Didn't mention yet, college basketball. Today as well. UB is taking on Northern Illinois. That game had to get moved due to the weather that is expected today. I think it was initially supposed to go on yesterday, got moved to today. 1 p.m. tip-off at Northern Illinois. That game's going to be over on the Bet 1520. Should also mention, though, UB is already 1-0 in the MAC. They had kind of like a weird end of their non-conference where they had a conference game.
There was one conference game.
Then they wrapped up the non-conference. And also with that being said, so of course they're 1-0 in conference play. They're 11-2. Only behind Miami of Ohio in the MAC right now in terms of overall wins. Miami of Ohio did go 12-0, in their non-conference schedule. They're now 2-0 to start the conference play. They didn't really play anybody. I will mention that. They did not really play anybody, but that did in fact happen. And then, as we mentioned, with college football, Cotton Bowl. It's been a little while since the college football playoffs been on, with the Christmas break essentially kind of being the bridge there.
And it's the first time we see Ohio State in the playoffs.
I think
this year.
Ohio State's going to kill Miami. I think they're going to kill them.
What do you mean? The lowest scoring game of the college football playoff winner is going to face Ohio State? Everything's going to be fine.
It's going to be just totally
I don't know
fine.
What you're talking about.
And then tomorrow's the really fun games. Oregon, Texas Tech in the Orange Bowl at noon. Alabama, Indiana, the Rose Bowl, that's at 4. And the Sugar Bowl, Mississippi, Georgia at 8 o'clock. I actually really like that entire bracket right there. Miami and Ohio State, I think, is going to be the only game where I'm seriously like, this is going to be a blowout. We saw Georgia and Mississippi earlier this year in the SEC. That was a very close game. I know Lane Kiffin's not there, but most of the players are still all there. Oregon, Texas Tech kind of feels like a game of two teams that are maybe a year or two out. Tech with all the oil money they have and might be the big dogs in the Big 12. Oregon, just the sheer fact that they've had to turn over last year's roster. And Alabama, Indiana, baby. Blue blood versus new blood. What do we got cooking there? Yeah. That's going to be a lot of fun. Cannot wait for that. And, of course, it's New Year's Day, you know, bowl game action. These are the bowl games I really like.
These are the bowl games that are here for. And everyone's, even before the playoff really expanded, it was the New Year's Six.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
And this is pretty much where we're at with that. It's now, instead of it being the New Year's Six, they are replaced by being playoff games now.
Also.
By the way, yesterday.
Hot take maybe. I think every national championship game should be played at the Rose Bowl. Sorry, continue.
All right, so to go back to the Sabres real quick as we're a minute away from the end of our show here, Lindy Ruff saying that yesterday Alex Lyon is being evaluated for lower body injury. I wonder when that could have happened. Colton Ellis could be ready to come off of injured reserve if Lyon is not available after evaluation. We'll see what happens, but it looks like Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen is going to get the start regardless tonight then.
You were mentioning, though, yesterday.
Luukkonen has a 1-3 record against Dallas. But has allowed only 10 goals in the four games. Get the man some goal support. because he's doing well against the Stars.
Get him some goal support. This, though, is one of the best teams in the West. It is frustrating. No one in the East around the Sabres is starting to drop games. They are just kind of lingering all together. Winning. And we mentioned it before this game came up. Like, if you beat St. Louis, the Dallas game doesn't have that feel of, like, must win. I mean, you want to for the 10 straight, but this is going to be one of their toughest challenges to this point. And we mentioned Jason Robertson may not make Team USA, and I have no idea how he's going to play with that. We'll find out about Team USA and their Olympic roster and Canada's as well. Sabres live coming up next. You're listening to WGR.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show. We bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.